We're talking about President Trump's efforts to overturn the election, throw out ballots that have been cast, and push dubious claims of voter fraud, and how these overtures disenfranchise voters, especially within communities of color. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in the sixth day of a recount in Milwaukee and Dane counties, not the rest of the state, mind you, which is largely white. Civil rights advocates, political scientists, historians echo the sentiment that this is a brazen attack on black voters. Milwaukee voters, what challenges have you faced in elections this year? Do you feel heard? How do you feel about the Trump campaign challenges? It's 800-642-1234. Angela Lang is executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, or BLOC. Angela, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Christine Newman-Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera Action, an immigrant and labor rights advocacy organization. Christine, welcome back.
Good morning. It's a pleasure.
Well, Christine, let's start with you. Before we go back into the weeks leading up to the election, what are your takeaways right now as you watch these legal battles unfold and the challenges to the vote?
It's not unexpected, actually. I think it's consistent. It's consistent with Trump and how he has operated. You know, he's operated in really promoting lies and undermining democracy, attacking civil rights of people of color, and others, and so I think it's and he's really, you know, tried to promote belligerence and violence from a base, a particular base that follows him uncritically, and that's why he was voted out of office, frankly. And he is you know, they are now transitioning out, and thank goodness that there are still people, you know, that even in, like, you know, in different parts of society that have stepped forward, whether through administrative or, you know, especially like the election commissioners, like who were Republican, and just that, you know, our imperfect system was, you know, has operated to really make sure that the votes have been counted. And if there is disenfranchisement, we know it comes certainly here in Wisconsin from photo ID, from gerrymandering. So if you want to talk about voter and disenfranchisement, there is. But despite that, the harm that has been done and what he has kind of woken up, tried to wake up in people, there was a huge, you know, response or rejection of that, especially from people of color voters. So I am hopeful. And I know the people who we organized, and I know Angela and her folks, you know, like we're hopeful for the change that's overdue, that we are going to fight for under a new Biden administration.
Angela, with the recount underway in Dane and Milwaukee counties, requested, paid for by the Trump campaign, what effect do you see this having on our state's two most diverse counties and the voters there?
Yeah, you know, I've said this whole time that some of the most marginalized folks that are the most hard hit from voter suppression are also the same ones that are hard hit from the pandemic. And I feel like this is just a distraction for our state. Our COVID cases keep rising. They keep climbing. Our families are suffering. And instead of, you know, lawmakers being able to focus on this, you have folks like Robin Voss that are also saying that we should be investigating these issues, which is completely ridiculous. And it
Assembly
takes
Speaker.
Away what we can actually be doing in our state. And also it further, as Christine, I think, alluded to, it further divides this kind of us versus them mentality and us, you know, being black and brown people that are the most marginalized. We see that his supporters, they believe every conspiracy theory, they believe every lie, and some of them are actually moved to action and be dangerous in our own communities. And I think that that is also something that is at risk of knowing, as long as these conspiracy theories and these just like ridiculous accusations keep flying around, it can actually be very dangerous for our community. We've seen what happened in Kenosha when the 17-year-old, whose name I refuse to say, opened fire on three protesters and killed two of them, right? We're seeing how this outgoing president has stoked those fears and being able to say that Black and brown people and Indigenous folks can't even vote the right way without it being suspected as something illegal is also a long-term damaging effect to communities of color.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Angela Lang there, Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, or BLOC. Christine Newman-Ortiz is Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera Action. We're discussing the election through the lens of race and what we see now in these legal battles and the challenges of the vote. Your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. Christine, now take us back in the weeks leading up to the election. What did your work look like?
We were really building momentum much earlier on because we knew how high stakes this election is for the Latino community and for so many others. So we really started a new approach in 2018 that was very successful, called Voceros por el Voto, and it was really focused on building a statewide voting network, primarily of Latino and youth to turn out. And so it's also known as kind of like relational voting. And so we did that, and it was very successful in 2018. And then for 2020, really, for over a year and a half in the lead up to November 3rd, we just really scaled that up, even through the pandemic, which was possible to do because it's based on people you know. And we're able to get to over 20,000 voters, primarily Latino voters in that network, Latino and youth. And then we were able to also kind of do what you would do traditionally, which is like, you know, through like work Spanish language media as statewide. We did phone banking. And then towards the end, we did COVID-19 safe neighborhood canvassing because it was just, you know, because that you just had to be able to reach some people some way through traditional means. And so we ended up, you know, reaching 100,000 people, the majority of those which are new or don't vote frequently.
Angela, how about you? Because the situation was growing more dire with COVID, not being able to meet and organize in person, and police brutality and the protests through the summer and into the fall, the Black Lives Matter movement. How did all of that factor into the work that you were doing?
Yeah, it was just really difficult. I think a lot of organizations had to pivot very quickly. We are the most known for our field program. We had a really ambitious goal of being able to knock 500,000 doors with all four elections this year. And we had to shut down our office in mid-March, actually, just a few weeks before the April 7th election. You know, we had to switch to tools like Hustle and virtual phone banks in order to text. But those were things that we didn't even have as an organization because we're just so used to being out in the field. So we had to convert those conversations in a more virtual space. But then we also wanted folks to know that we were there for them, you know, not being able just to text them about the election or making sure they know how to request an absentee ballot. There are times we were doing wellness checks on folks. It was a couple days before the April election and we weren't leading with the election. We wanted to make sure that people were safe. They had whatever they needed and being able to be connected to resources. And we also know that every issue that that this related to in our community was also something that we were dealing with personally. So increased mental health challenges, increased domestic violence issues, all of those things, our ambassadors who were showing up every day also had to deal with. So it was incredibly difficult.
Let's pause there with the leaders of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, Angela Lang and Voces de la Frontera Action, Christine Newman-Ortiz, back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing the effects of President Trump's challenges on communities of color and takeaways from voter turnout and organizing. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In Detroit, a group of voters brought a federal lawsuit Friday claiming the Trump campaign's legal actions aimed at throwing out some votes disenfranchised black voters. How do you view these acts of trying to throw out votes in cities that overwhelmingly vote Democratic? Is this an attack on black voters or, as the president's lawyers say, an effort to have safe, secure, and fair elections? It's 800-642-1234. Angela Lang is head of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing Communities. And Christine Newman-Ortiz leads Voces de la Frontera Action, and they stay with us. Christine, the American Election Eve poll says the 2020 Wisconsin Latino turnout was 74%. How does that high percentage strike you?
This is a historic level of turnout, and traditionally it would be at a little over 50% or less than 50%. Voces has been organizing, you know, since 2004, the Latino vote. But, you know, it's historic in terms of, you know, not just the turnout, but the also the sheer size. So, and that's true for like Wisconsin, but it's also true nationally. And so it's without a doubt, it was decisive contribution in the results, in delivering this victory for the Biden administration. And so, you know, to me, when I think about it, it is there's a saying that, you know, the Latino vote is the sleeping giant. And it was this election where the sleeping giant woke up and stood up, and it was the election in which to do it. So there's a tremendous amount of pride. I do feel it interesting because in the initial narrative of the elections, one of the things that we've had to fight consistently, you know, has been kind of a dominant narrative that really does have a blind spot or actually falsely represents, you know, the importance of the Latino vote and also like the issues that drive them to vote. So
that you can't make these sweeping generalizations about how a group will vote in any one way, that, you know, there is a lot of diversity within a particular demographic group.
Correct. And so in the initial narrative that came out through the like Edison poll was like, why are Latinos, you know, why are there so many inroads for Trump and so forth, that narrative, which was absolutely contrary to reality. So there was definitely been like some unpackaging and immediate challenging to that. And what was really exposed is that like the Edison poll, not just this year, last year and others, it really like oversamples Cuban voters. So example, in Florida, Cuban voters are, you know, have been, you know, traditionally very conservative. Also, it doesn't take into sample Spanish language voters. It doesn't go into major cities, you know, where you have a majority, actually, of Latino voters. So those initial numbers were skewed. And so what I have seen unfold over the years is there's been a real ownership, too, around Latino engagement in elections, including like the polling, which is much more nuanced, mm-hmm. which really breaks down the community. So here in Wisconsin, the majority is from U.S. you know, of Mexican American descent. Then you have, you know, naturalized immigrants, largely from, you know, largest being from Latin America and from Mexico within that, and then followed by Puerto Rican, and then from Central America, South America. You know, Caribbean, kind of as a third group of Latinos.
We're talking,
and they have different experiences.
Yeah, we're talking with Christine Newman-Ortiz and Angela Lang, their community organizers in Milwaukee. We're discussing our diverse politics and what we learned in November. With your thoughts as well, did you work to organize your family, your friends, your neighbors? What did you learn from that experience? 800-642-1234. Angela, I'm wondering if this inability to see a group for who they are transcends Black voters, transcends Hispanic or Indigenous voters, that these groups do not get the level of analysis and nuance that they deserve, and therefore you see these sweeping generalizations about, quote unquote, the Black vote.
Yeah, absolutely. I think every cycle, people always want to get a handle on the Black vote. Or if you're in Wisconsin, the code is like, oh, well, we have to figure out Milwaukee. And I think a lot of times people just don't know how to interact with our communities, which I think, you know, the work that Christina and I do is so important because we are so deeply connected into the communities in which we advocate and serve. And I think in 2016, we saw that, you know, Black and brown voters were taken for granted. There were assumptions made that we voted for Obama, so we didn't need a certain level of persuasion, maybe that other demographics did. And so I think people learned that lesson in 2016. And ahead of the 2020 election, we know that, you know, presidential candidates, when it was a crowded primary, were they were coming to our city early. I know we had three presidential candidates visit us in 2019. So people definitely learned to pay attention to the Black vote and the Latino vote. But at the same time, I felt like people this year kind of became obsessed with it in a way of just polling and data and numbers. And everyone wanted to have the most Black support. But what did that actually mean? Did that mean that they knew our stories? Did that mean that they knew our issues? Were they writing campaign plans based off of the feedback in the community? So I would like to see a little bit more of that. You know, I'm glad that there's more of a dominant narrative about the role of communities of color and voters of color. But I would like to see that teased out a little bit more on what that actually means, instead of folks just feeling like they've earned our support but don't really have anything more else to say about that.
Yeah, so it's like, will they show up to govern? Will they show up understanding and carrying out the constituent issues and needs?
Absolutely. Right. And that's something that we need to make sure that we're doing on a year round basis. That's why it's so important for our organizations to continue to exist and not just pack up and go home, is that we are able to do that accountability work, especially on the local level. We're able to talk to older people and then make sure that they're voting the ways that we want to see them vote. And when it comes to the city budget, for example. And so it's so important for us to make sure that after we elect folks, we don't just kind of walk away. If we actually voted for change, we need to see that change through. And I think a lot of times we go really, really hard and get really, really excited to elect people. And then we walk away expecting them to know how to govern, when really the people that elected them should be helping guide the agenda of what they should be doing.
Like, that's when the real work begins. Christine, you know, what do you see there? How would you like to see both parties respond to your constituents when it is time to get down to work and to carry out these issues and these needs that they've heard on the campaign trail?
I think at the federal level, the Biden administration has a really good platform on immigration and on the pandemic response. And those were two issues that really drove people to the polls. When we talked to people, it wasn't just an anti-Trump vote. They really wanted to know, needed to know, Black and Latinos have been, families have been disproportionately affected by COVID-19. And, you know, they have higher numbers of, you know, essential workers. Those were, you know, big issues that we knew we were also during the pandemic early on relating to supporting people in getting the protections they needed, issues around access to testing and all that. And so, you know, that agenda is very good. I think it includes appointments, too. Like, who are you appointing to the administration? Are there people who are going to truly champion those issues and continuing to engage the community? And I think, so fulfilling your promises and making sure that you, particularly to people of color voters, because it is too often that when people turn out to you, and frankly, I'll say, you know, whether it's people of color or labor, they're taken for granted. And I would just say, we're not going to take ourselves for granted. Mm. And so it is about making sure that we are, pushing for that. And there is an urgency. It's not just, these are not small things, the issues around, so much harm in the case of the immigration, the new appointment. It is someone who was involved in the implementation of DACA that protected, dreamers.
But and I was going to ask you, Christine, how does the lack of representation of undocumented immigrants affect their participation and trust in politics, in the political process?
It starts from a place of alienation. And frankly, for a lot of working class Latino U.S. citizens, too, there is a real disconnect, which is what, we've been working on for a long, long time. And so what we saw with this approach, which is really organizing through people you know, and again, outside of elections, this is what we do, but it was only till 2016 challenged the traditional way things were done that we could kind of take that same approach into an electoral organizing. And it's so empowering, so transformative. What we saw was, for example, Luis, who's a DACA recipient, he's actually the pastor of the Hispanic Ministries, the Methodist Church statewide. And his parents were deported. He ended up organizing 50 voters he knows to turn out.
Wow. Well, we have to leave it there. Thank you both for joining us. Christine Newman-Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera Action, Angela Lang with Block.